From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
Californians have historically placed a high value on higher education. Indeed, California's universities have generally been viewed as among the very best in the world. But as the cost of providing higher education keeps rising, the UC and CSU systems have seen significant cuts in state funding in the last few years. And while the economy and the state's funding for higher education are finally beginning to improve, the governor has made it clear that the UC and CSU systems will have to do more with less. Can higher education costs be cut while at the same time improving access and graduation rates? What are the governor's proposals to improve higher education in California? And will they work? We'll ask. A key spokesperson for the Brown administration, H.D. Palmer, the Deputy Director of External Affairs at the California Department of Finance. Jennifer Kuhn, Deputy Legislative Analyst and an expert on education issues at the nonpartisan California Legislative Analyst Office. And Republican Assembly Member Kristen Olson of Modesto. We'll also hear from Dr. Dorothy Leland, Chancellor of the University of California, Merced. Dr. John Welty, President of California State University, Fresno. Dr. Joseph Sheely, President of California State University, Stanislaus, and Dr. Horace Mitchell, President of California State University, Bakersfield. UCs and CSUs, getting a bigger bang for the buck.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. The headlines about Governor Jerry Brown's newly proposed funding increase have focused on freezing tuition for higher education. Lesser known is the call by the governor for the University of California and California State University systems to rein in costs, operate more efficiently, and get students to obtain their diplomas more quickly. Our guest is a key spokesman for the Brown administration, H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director of External Affairs for the California Department of Finance. Welcome back to the Maddie Report.
Happy to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, there's three big issues the governor seems to be focusing on in his higher education budget, and that is improving access, reducing cost, and improving student graduation rates. So let's address each one of those in order.
All of which are interrelated, too.
Yeah. Let's talk about the first one. That is improving access. What's the governor proposing?
Well, the governor is proposing a couple of things, one of which is that as part of the overall funding increase for UC and CSU next year, about $125 million, about $10 million would be earmarked to begin to develop online courses that will help to break some of the bottlenecks in some of the lower level courses that are prerequisites to be able to move on. Because if there's a blockage there and students can't get those courses that they need to move on, then that's going to mean that they're going to have to stay in longer, and that's going to mean more cost, more debt for themselves and for their parents. The second thing is to propose a cap on the number of courses, accredited courses, that students can take with state support. And the idea is to help move them through the process and be able to free up some space, because access is one of the things that's going to be critical to student achievement and to cost savings.
Yeah, those are the unit caps that he's talking about.
Exactly.
So the super seniors, people that seem to stay in school forever.
Right.
There's actually a cost to the state for those folks. What is exactly the cost of the state for folks staying in school beyond the 120 units they need to graduate?
It's the state subsidy. What the state is providing is in terms of the overall share of the cost of education for those students. So if they're staying on for a fifth year or a sixth year, it's not only costing them more money, it's costing the state more money. And again, at the expense of students who are, you know, through the pipeline and can't get the courses they need to try to graduate on time.
What about controlling the cost of higher education? I mean, they've been escalating pretty quickly as well. What is the governor proposing to control costs? As online education is one of his big proposals, correct?
That and the unit caps are as well. Because the system that we've got now, first of all, let us agree that the university system and the college system in California is one of the finest in the nation, if not the world. It was just announced that Berkeley and UCLA have been recognized as two of the top 10 research universities in the entire world. That said, we have a system that's not sustainable right now. We've got revenue growth in the state that's growing at about 4% a year. And their initial proposals, UC was proposing a 12% increase, and CSU was proposing an 18% increase. So what's going to fill that gap? In the past, it's been, you know,
that might have been wishful thinking on their part.
Right. But that was their initial proposal. And what fills that gap? It would be tuition increases. And as the governor said in the State of the State address, we can't expect students or their parents to continue to be the default financiers for colleges and universities. So what the governor's committed to do is to say, for the next 2 years, I commit to a 5% year-over-year increase for UC and CSU, a 4% increase each year for the 2 years after that. In return, both systems have got to start developing more efficiencies, such as online courses, such as Unicaps, to be able to try to move people to a faster time to graduation, to get them done in the job market and with less cost and less debt.
Well, one of the criticisms, though, is that the governor is giving this money to UC and CSU with, quote-unquote, no strings attached. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, we believe that, you know, working with the Board of Regents at UC and the Board of Governors at CSU, they understand that this is a system that's not sustainable. The governor has been to meetings with both of those bodies already. He will continue to be there. And in working with them, we think that we can get to a mutual system whereby we all recognize the kinds of reforms that we need to put in place. But the governor has teed two of them up in this budget with the online courses and the Unicaps.
You know, when I talk about the online courses, there's a question of whether or not they're going to be as efficient, whether or not they're going to provide the same quality level of education. But one of the things that another thing that people question is whether or not people will graduate with online classes. Mm-hmm. There was a study that showed that only about 10% of people who take online classes actually complete them. Mm-hmm. Is there a concern that this is actually not going to help the graduation rate?
Well, that study, and I'm not familiar with it, may have been referring to what they're called MOOCs, massive open online courses that are being provided free of charge. And, you know, people are participating because of their intellectual curiosity. That's not the case with what the governor's proposing. We're talking about online courses that will be part of what you pay for in tuition. The other thing the governor's talking about is having them being asynchronous, which means that everybody doesn't have to go online at the same time. You can take those courses online, you know, at when your schedule is convenient. And in terms of interaction with teachers, or lecturers, that can be done online too. We've got remarkable technologies and cell phones and Skype, Google Hangouts, all of those types of things, where there can be a face-to-face interaction with instructors. And again, the goal of this is to utilize technology in a creative way to try to free up more of those blockages that we've seen, the kind of those dams that show up where students right now can't get the courses they need to move on and to graduate on time.
Well, I want to thank H.D. Palmer from the Department of Finance for joining us. Some, like the governor, think California's universities must change significantly in the way they do business in light of growing demands and limited resources. Does the way the UCs and CSUs offer higher education need major retooling? Our guest is Jennifer Kuhn, Deputy Legislative Analyst and an expert on education issues with the nonpartisan California Legislative Analyst Office. Welcome to the Matty Report. Well, are the governor's concerns about higher education justified? For example, he's talking about the high-cost delivery model of higher education, that it's just simply not sustainable to have a professor in front of a classroom. Is he right about that?
We think he is making an important point in that despite advances in technology, the traditional higher education delivery model is still predicated on a faculty member with an advanced degree teaching a relatively small number of students in a physical setting. And these costs, labor and facility costs, are even greater at research universities where teaching workload tends to be less and their laboratory space tends to be more expensive. Costs in California tend to be even greater because the UC system is relatively larger than other research university systems.
Yeah, I read in your report, I think it was the average cost at a UC was $166,000,
right.
And the average cost at peer institutions was about $140,000 to graduate a student. And you attribute that to the higher cost, compensation costs, cost of living, emphasis on science, things of that nature?
A combination of those are probably explaining it. The way that UC does business is likely to look a little bit different. Although faculty workloads are at research universities are relatively low across the country, between lab space and faculty compensation and class sizes and emphasis on research, it is driving up UC costs somewhat above other research universities.
Okay, what about the way they fund higher education? They typically fund it on this thing called FTE, full-time equivalent, basically enrollment. Does that encourage or discourage innovation and improvement?
It certainly doesn't encourage it explicitly. So traditionally, the state has had this model where it's based largely entirely on enrollment. It tries to make an estimate on the margin how much UC and CSU are spending to fund an additional student and gives them an augmentation to serve a set number of students. And the model isn't predicated on changing how they educate students, using technology differently, ensuring that certain improvements in student outcomes are achieved. It's just been very quantitative. We'll give you $10 million for so many students, serve that number of students.
Not necessarily get them out.
it talks about the unavailability of some courses. I mean, everybody knows that if you can't get a course, if you're a student, that's going to increase your cost. But here's the question. Does it increase the cost to the taxpayer for a student who can't get in a class and it takes them longer to get through school?
Yes. So it's increasing costs for both the student and the state. If students can't get into high-demand courses that they need for graduation, they end up taking courses to sort of bide their time, to still get financial aid. They take more units than they need to graduate. It takes longer for them to graduate.
And those courses that they're taking, those extra courses, are being subsidized by the state, correct?
Yes. There's no limit or cap on the number of units the state will subsidize. So it increases the state's cost. It takes longer for students to enter the workforce. Students are also crowding out space that could be used for other students who need to take.
What about graduation rates at UCs and CSUs? How are they faring? Are they getting students out in a timely manner?
UC's system-wide rates are generally good. So for full-time undergraduate students at UC, about 80% are graduating within 6 years. It's a little bit better than the average of other research institutions, which is about 65%. But UC still would recognize it has some problems at some campuses. For example, the graduation rate at UC Merced is less than 60%. At UC Riverside is less than 70%. For CSU, the graduation rates are more disconcerting. So less than half of full-time students at CSU graduate within 6 years.
Less than half.
Less than half. Now, that's a little bit better than comparable institutions across the country, so few institutions are doing particularly well in this case. But CSU itself, we, the administration, there's a general belief that CSU needs to be doing better in this area.
What about tuition levels? They've been going up rapidly. How affordable are UCs and CSUs compared to other public universities around the country?
UC tends to be compared to four other public research institutions, and its tuition levels are middle of the pack. CSU is compared to 15 public institutions, and it's the lowest of the 15. And when it comes to affordability, it's not just the tuition level, but it's also financial aid and the degree to which those tuition costs are offset. And California across the country is known for having relatively generous aid packages. More than half of UC and CSU students get grant aid that fully covers their tuition.
So tuition's gone up, but so has the aid.
Right. From 2007 through 2012-13, fees doubled, tuition levels doubled, but financial aid, and I think this is sometimes the forgotten part of the story, also doubled. So that for many of these students, as tuition levels were going up, the size of their Cal Grant was going up dollar for dollar. They were, to a large extent, insulated from the impact of the
increases. But the people who are paying are the people who don't qualify, the families that don't qualify for those grants and loans.
Right. So for those who do, for the families, for example, in the $50,000 to $75,000 range who are qualifying for aid, they're largely being insulated. At CSU, if you get up above $75,000, or at UC, if you get up above $110,000, that's when your grant aid starts being reduced. These families were seeing increases of 13, 15, 17%.
Our guest is Jennifer Kuhn, legislative analyst and expert on education issues with the nonpartisan Legislative Analyst Office. You know, in your report, you state that, quote, the governor's overall approach is unlikely to improve higher education, unquote. Why do you say that?
The main component of the governor's budget plan are these unallocated base increases for the universities, roughly 5% for a number of years. And they're very loosely linked to student achievement outcomes. Under the governor's approach, because he gives the base increases, the performance expectations are very loosely defined. We're concerned that the state could actually see increases in spending per student without any notable improvements. So we just don't think the linkage is tight enough.
I think it's the no strings attached. Do you want to attach those to performance expectations?
Some expectations, yeah.
Okay. And your report also states that, quote, the university funding model has problems, unquote, by emphasizing access over success. What do you mean by that?
Well, traditionally, the state has focused, again, just on funding the universities for the students that they serve. And even that model, which wasn't particularly good to begin with, since it just promoted access, it didn't really help the universities focus on helping those students succeed. Over the last few years, even that enrollment-based model has unraveled, with the state giving augmentations and reductions to the universities without any strings attached, without any student expectations. So we've been arguing the legislature should consider funding alternatives that would get the universities to focus both on serving a set number of students as well as on helping them succeed, graduate, complete their programs.
Another thing the report states is, quote, extended tuition, an extended tuition freeze would likely have a negative long and near-term consequences. Negative long-term and near-term consequences. Why do you say that?
We looked back over the last 25 years at tuition levels and saw that extended periods of flat fees were almost always followed by very steep increases. And the steep increases come during bad economic times.
So in other words, you know, they freeze tuition or keep tuition low. The state then has financial problems. They then, when the economy is not doing well, they then go to the student or family and say, okay, now we're going to increase your tuition dramatically. Just when you're in the midst of an economic downturn?
Exactly.
That's
how it's worked over the last quarter of a decade, a century. And then we're also concerned in the near term, if we freeze tuition levels and ask the state to bear every cost increase, then students don't have an incentive to make sure that every cost increase is justified, that is providing value to them in their program, that the state is getting value as well. So both in the long term and the near term, we think there are these adverse consequences of something that might sound good, extended tuition freezes.
Right. You just wait until your next kid goes through school. It's going to probably be a big increase. Okay, what about dealing with sharing the cost of higher education? I think you alluded to something referred to as a unit cap proposal. What do you think about that proposal, the unit cap proposal?
We both think that the state and students should have an expectation about the share of costs that they should cover. But then we're also concerned that right now the state does not limit the number of units that it'll subsidize. So there's very weak incentives for both the student and the institutions to focus on completing programs. So we do think it's reasonable that the state have a limit on the number of units that it'll subsidize. And then the governor and the legislature will just need to work through what kinds of courses to count toward that cap.
You know, it's kind of the devil is in the details, right? What issues need to be addressed if you're going to really implement a successful unit cap policy?
The state has to consider whether it'll count courses that were taken in high school, that were taken through other providers, that were unsubsidized. What will happen if you're doing a double major or if you failed a course? In all of these cases, we think there are solutions such that the state can still create positive incentives for students to save their own time and money, take courses in high school, test out of college courses, still explore majors without providing such incentives that neither the student nor the institution are really focused on completion.
Your report also states that the governor's proposal regarding higher education include, quote, some good ideas, unquote, but they need, quote, unquote, reworking. So what are you referring to there specifically?
I think the best example of this is in online education, where the governor says, we need to do something in online education. I'll earmark some money for it. Let's have more classes. And the state already has substantial number of classes. To use community colleges as an example, they already spend $500 million, serve 100,000 full-time equivalent students, have 20,000 courses. So we think the issue is less about more courses and more about how to ensure a student has access to the best online course anywhere in California, maybe anywhere in the country, that they can count it to their degree and that the state's funding it appropriately.
Well, I want to thank Jennifer Kuhn from the LAO for being with us. Our next guest is Republican Assemblymember Kristen Olson of Modesto, who knows a thing or two about higher education, having served as the Assistant Vice President for Communications and Public Affairs at California State University Stanislaus before joining the state legislature. Welcome back to the Manny Report.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, you know, we've seen a lot of large tuition increases at the UC and CSUs over the last few years. Is that a short-term solution, or is that a long-term change and shifting the responsibility for paying for higher education from the state to students and their parents?
I certainly hope it's not a long-term change. I believe it began as a short-term solution to California's heavy budget problems. And rather than prioritize education and higher education, the legislature at that time chose to cut. And so the universities were left pretty much with no choice but to increase tuition. We are to a place now where we have got to get back to the days when state funding of higher education is a priority again. The future of our economy really depends on it.
Yeah, there seems to be a shortfall in the number of college-educated students that we need going forward. But let me ask you this. You and the governor are talking about a tuition freeze. Now, the nonpartisan legislative analyst has stated that a tuition freeze would, quote, very likely result in steep tuition increases during the next economic downturn and reduced accountability in the near term, unquote. How do you respond to that?
You know, the goal here is really predictability and giving students and families a reliable and predictable tuition rate should be the goal. They need to be able to plan for the investment, know what it's going to cost them. And therefore, I think it's appropriate to say to a student, if you're going to come to a public university, you can rely on the fact that you're going to have a fixed tuition rate for 4 years. But really the goal is predictability much more than it is a hard and fast freeze.
Okay. Another thing that's being talked about is this thing called a unit cap approach. And they're also talking about moderate, gradual, predictable, as you're saying, tuition increases over time. What are your thoughts about that unit cap proposal? And maybe if there is an increase, it's moderate and it's predictable.
I think a unit cap approach actually makes a lot of sense. It's not okay for students to have, you know, dozens and dozens more units than they need to be able to graduate, because what that leads to is other students who are trying to access a quality education and who simply can't get in.
So the professional student is eating up resources.
It really is. You know, we have limited resources, and we need to get students into the system, give them a top quality, fantastic experience, and then get them out and into the workforce so that we can graduate more students.
I think a lot of parents would probably agree with you on that.
I agree.
Let me ask you about this. The governor is talking about providing more flexibility and local control to campuses. The LAO, on the other hand, is saying, listen, any additional money should be used to pay down debt, take care of employee pension obligations, and if there's anything left over, that should be linked explicitly to performance expectations. So which side do you fall on, the governor's or the LAO's?
I actually agree with both statements. There needs to be a balance. The fact is, we've got to deal with the debt. That's just wise fiscal management practices. On the other hand, you know, I do believe in the power of local control, allowing university campuses to emphasize where they're strong. But I also think we could benefit from more cooperation between the campuses. Not every degree program needs to be offered at every 23 campus of the CSU system.
It seems like a lot of duplication.
So I think the sweet spot is in finding the balance.
What about the LAO's comment that he thinks that online education can be expanded with existing resources? You know, the governor wants to provide, you say, $10 million to each of the UC and the CSU. LAO says, no, you can do it with existing resources. What are your thoughts on that?
Certainly there are some things that the universities could do with existing resources. There are examples of some great online programs already taking place. There's no doubt, though, we need to expand that. We need to provide options to students. And the fact is, online course offerings are the best option for many, many students in California. I do think it will take existing resources over time. Increased funding over time. But we can start with existing resources, and then as universities prove that they're meeting certain benchmarks, increase those funding levels as time goes on.
You know, one of the things you mentioned was this fact that we're going to have a need for more college-educated folks. And PPIC came out with a study that said that the way we're going, we're going to be about a million graduates short by 2025. The problem people point out is that the populations that are increasing in California are those very populations that aren't going to college or aren't graduating from college. So how do you fix that problem?
You know, this is a great concern in California, and it's one of the reasons we need a predictable and reliable tuition rate so that people can access a quality education and we can encourage more students to attain a college degree. The fact is, right now, we have hundreds of thousands of Californians who can't find a job. And yet, interestingly enough, we have California companies who have job openings and can't find people to fill them. So there's a tremendous gap, particularly in engineering fields, math fields, and we need to make sure we're investing in universities and encourage students to attain the education that they need in order to fill those jobs.
Well, I want to thank Kristen Olson, Assembly Member from Modesto, for joining us, as well as H.D. Palmer from the California Department of Finance and Jennifer Kuhn from the California Legislative Analyst Office.
Up next, what impact will this have on public universities in the Central Valley? We'll talk to Dr. John Welty, president of California State University Fresno, Dr. Joseph Shealy, president of California State University Stanislaus, Dr. Horace Mitchell, president of California State University Bakersfield, and Dr. Dorothy Leland, chancellor of the University of California, Merced.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. Improving access and reducing the cost of higher education, as well as improving student success and graduation rates, are key goals of the University of California and California State University systems. The question is how we can meet and achieve those goals in an era of financial limits. Those are the challenges faced by our guests, the leaders of public education in the San Joaquin Valley. Dr. Joseph Shealy,
President of the California State University at Stanislaus, Dr. Horace Mitchell, President of California State University Bakersfield, Dr. Dorothy Leland, Chancellor of the University of California Merced, and Dr. John Welty, President of California State University Fresno. Welcome to the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition.
Thank you.
Well, let's first,
thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for being here. Well, let's first talk about improving access. After years of rapid tuition increases, what are your thoughts of a tuition freeze? Do you agree with the governor and some legislators that tuition needs to be frozen for several years? Or do you agree with the legislative analysts who says that, quote, extended tuition freeze would likely have a negative long and near-term consequence, unquote. President Welty from Cal State Fresno, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think if the state of California is willing to reinvest in higher education, it's certainly possible to freeze tuition. But in the absence of that reinvestment, I think it is short-sighted to freeze tuition for a period of time because we have such huge demand being placed on our campuses for students who want to attend the university.
Dr. Sheely, what's your sense at Cal State Stanislaus?
That there's got to be some reasonable middle ground here. I mean, it isn't that I don't understand that the LAO position that you don't stake out a territory that you can't ultimately defend later on, and we don't want to be changing in midstream. By the same token, we do need some predictability for the campuses and for the students, and at least the discussion of conditions under which tuition might be frozen needs to happen. And the important part of that is conditions. And the problem thus far has been we've been ad hocing it.
You know, Dr. Mitchell at Cal State Bakersfield, I'm assuming that a number of students attend your university because it's a good university and because it's relatively low expense in the Bakersfield area for some students in California. Do you think that tuition should be frozen or should it be increased or what?
Well, I think it would be in the interest of all of our students if they could have a low tuition. The question is that possible under current circumstances? And, of course, the only time that the CSU Board of Trustees initiate an increase in student fees is when there is a shortfall in state appropriations, such as what has happened over the last several years when we've lost almost $1 billion of state funding. And so it's a matter of not so much that the price of higher education is going up. It's more that who is paying is changing, and students have been paying a higher percentage than the legislature, the state government. And so if the state government could assure appropriate levels of funding, then we could have a freeze on student tuition.
You know, Dr. Leland, you know, UC Merced, that's probably one of the best bargains maybe in the UC system. But even though tuition has gone up at the UCs like it has at the CSUs, what the LAO reports is that most of that increase has been absorbed by grants and other types of aid. Do you think that tuition needs to maybe be increased to better reflect the actual cost of higher education?
Well, again, I don't think we can answer the question in a vacuum. The support for public higher education comes both from the state and from student tuition and from grants and contracts and a few other sources. And just as my colleagues have said, what has happened is as the state support for public higher education has dramatically declined, students, unfortunately, have had to pick up more of the cost. It's not a situation that any of us like, but in order to freeze student tuition, the state would need to step up its support once again for public higher education.
You know, the costs of higher education, you know, have been going up. The LAO says that the costs at the university level in California are particularly high. What do you think is driving the cost of higher education, and what can be done to lower the cost of higher education? Dr. Sheely, we'll start with you at Cal State Stanislaus.
I think those are two separate questions. One is it inordinately high? And I haven't been able yet to figure out what they really mean. Since I've been in the CSU, the focus is on how to squeeze more out of the dollars we get, more so than how many dollars we're going to get, since we haven't been getting as much as we used to. We're consistently among the lowest funded in the country and consistently among the highest in efficiency and productivity. So I think it reduces to what exactly do they mean when they say we are too high. Do they mean we shouldn't be universities? Do they mean we should simply be only providing classes, for example, and not services?
Dr. Mitchell, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that the cost of higher education, the providing is particularly high in California, as the LAO seems to be suggesting?
No, I really don't. I mean, if you look at national surveys of our comparison institutions, you'll see that the CSU, for example, ranks near the bottom in terms of the cost of tuition. And if you look on the other side of that, in terms of the level of indebtedness that students have because of the tuition burden, you'll find that our students in CSU have some of the lowest levels of student debt when they finish. And so I really don't agree with the idea that the price is too high. Now, has it been going up rapidly in the last several years? Absolutely, it has. And why has that happened? And again, back to what I was saying earlier, it's because of the withdrawal or the deinvestment of state support for higher education. And I think that is what needs to change.
You know, Dr. Leland, one of the things the LAO mentioned was that the UC, when compared with other peer institutions, you know, research institutions, it costs a little bit more for USC to provide a degree than some of its peers. The statistic it had was $166,000 for each degree it awards compared to $140,000 for its peers. What do you attribute the difference in cost to providing higher education at a UC versus comparable educational institutions across the country?
Well, I don't agree with the premise. The LAO report in this instance is comparing apples to oranges. One of the things that the University of California has that its peers don't is the Blue and Gold program, and that's basically students whose family make less than $80,000 a year pay no tuition. And that tuition shows as a pass-through in our budget, as an expenditure in our budget, but it actually goes right back to the students to offset their fees. So it's just not an appropriate comparison.
You know, one of the things that the LAO did mention, though, is that there is a greater emphasis on science programs at the UC than its peers, and also the fact that California has a higher cost of living than a lot of other states. So that may attribute be a reason for some of the difference. But let me turn our attention.
Well, but
go ahead.
May I jump in?
Sure.
It's the cost to students of public higher education in California has increased, but the expenditure per student has declined. And that fact is directly linked to the decline in state support. So we've been doing it cheaper.
Okay. Well, you know, one thing that they're talking about is this increased use of online education, online courses as a way to reduce costs. Now, President Welty, I wanted to ask you, you know, at Cal State Fresno, do you think that providing online courses is going to result in a second-rate educational experience, is some fear, or is it going to provide a comparable or even better college experience than the traditional professor in front of the classroom approach?
Well, I think it's possible to improve the educational experience for students using online education. But the important thing, I think, to recognize is that delivery through online requires a completely different design of the course itself. It requires a major investment up front in order to prepare the course, and it does not necessarily reduce costs. The only way you reduce costs is that if a course can be offered to a larger number of students than it currently is. And but at this point, I think there's a tendency to jump to a conclusion that online will automatically reduce costs. That is not the case, and I do think we've got a lot of experimenting yet to do before we really determine what's the most effective way to use online education.
Now, Dr. Sheely, up at Cal State Stanislaus, are you using a lot of online courses on your campus, and do you see them reducing costs and providing a good educational experience?
We are. I won't go into all of them since we don't have time. We are offering a lot of courses. It is possible to get your GE fairly much completely done for most students through online. We have an online MBA, et cetera. But the cost will not go down. What will go up, to the extent that we do it correctly and do it well, will be access, will be the ability of a student to schedule courses differently. We're giving students options when we do it, but I think we fool the public and ourselves if we actually think this is going to change the cost dynamic.
Dr. Mitchell, down at Cal State Bakersfield, how prevalent is online instruction at your campus?
We have a fair amount of online instruction, and we have a great interest in increasing that. And one of the things that we're going through right now is that our provost has been sending faculty members to various workshops and institutes having to do with quality online education. And so what we want to do is not simply to go to online, but to make sure that the courses that are designed to be online are high quality. And as we've been looking at it, we're thinking that more blended courses that have a combination of online features and faculty contact features might be a way to optimize the educational experience. But we see this as very much the way of the future, and we're investing in doing more. We don't think it will cost less. We'll have to make an investment to make it happen. And as I think President Welty said, the economies of scale come in when you have many more students taking the online course than you could have in a conventional classroom setting.
You know, Dr. Lee, another thing they're talking about is this thing called a unit cap proposal to control costs. How prevalent is the kind of the super senior at UCs like UC Merced?
Well, I mean, most of the students that I'm acquainted with want to complete as quickly as possible. And it's expensive to not complete in 4 to 6 years. So I don't think the unit cap will make a whole lot of difference to them.
You know, President Welty, what about at Cal State Fresno? CSUs, typically the research shows that they take a little longer to get through the program than UC students. Is there a concern with these super seniors and then maybe a need to address that with that issue with a unit cap proposal?
Well, I do think it is reasonable that we do cap the units a student may enroll in before they have to pay a larger amount. I think it's the state certainly subsidizes a student's education, and it's reasonable to say that no more than 30 units beyond the normal graduation rate is the level at which the state will provide support.
You know, Dr. Sheely, up at Cal State Stanislaus, the LEO has suggested that a new funding model based not on enrollment, but on a college's ability to meet, quote, clear expectations in areas such as program completions, degrees earned, research activity, and cost reductions, unquote, should be the way to go. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are, on the face of it, it's certainly worthy of discussion. Enrollment by itself is probably not the best funding model, but I worry that someone is putting it into either-or terms. Clearly, you cannot do funding models that don't take into account enrollment. By the same token, there is much to be said for pegging funding to the accomplishment of goals, but also to peg those goals to the type of university you are and the level of preparation of your students.
You know, Dr. Mitchell, at Cal State Bakersfield, it sounds like Dr. Sheely at Stanislaus is saying it's not an or situation, it's an and situation, that funding should be based on enrollment and performance. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think so. You know, the trick is always in defining those performance characteristics. For example, I came to the position of president of CSU Bakersfield from being a vice chancellor at UC Berkeley. And one of the big differences is that in the UC system, students are expected to be full-time. And it is the exception that a student is not full-time. Whereas in the CSU, a very high percentage of our students are part-time. And so those students are not going to be finishing in 4 years because they're putting in six, another kind of, six, maybe 9 hours toward degree completion, and they go into it not expecting to be finished in 4 years.
And so,
you know, when it comes to full-time, first-time, full-time freshmen, then you can use some different methods than if you're working with returning students.
That's a good point. Well, up next, what can be done to improve college graduation and transfer rates? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. It's projected that by 2025, only 35% of working-age adults will have a bachelor's degree in an economy that's expected to require 41% of its workers to be college-educated. That means the state's going to have 1 million fewer college-educated workers than the economy will require. What can be done to improve college graduation and transfer rates? We're talking with the leaders of the Valley's four public universities, Dr. Horace Mitchell, president of California State University Bakersfield, Dr. Dorothy Leland, chancellor of UC Merced, Dr. John Welty, president of California State University Fresno, and Dr. Joseph Shealy, president of California State University Stanislaus. So first, let's start with you, Dr. Mitchell. One of the major problems in the CSU is preparation. In 1996, the CSU set a goal to reduce the number of unprepared freshmen to 10% by 2007. Unfortunately, that goal was not met. So what's being done to improve student preparation on your campus?
Yeah, that's a really valid point. And the Board of Trustees were certainly disappointed that we were not achieving that. And what it has to do with is the level of student preparation coming out of high school and when they take our tests. I'll try to be very quick with this because we have a shorter time. A part of the CSU response is that it developed the early assessment program to test students in the 11th grade so that the results would be back by the 12th grade and they could do things in their senior year to deal with remediation. That's our preferred option. The trustees also passed the new rule that students must begin their remediation in the summer before their matriculation. Those are just two quick things.
Yeah, the CSU actually, it's been written, has done some pretty good work in helping students complete all their remedial work within 1 year. They've been fairly effective. What about UC Merced, Dr. Leland? Do you see that as a problem at UC Merced?
We also have some students that come from very underfunded school districts that are underprepared in both writing skills and in mathematical skills. And they complete their preparation the first year. We have not had problems in getting school students out of the pipeline because of this underpreparedness.
Okay, well, Dr. Welty, the next question is for you. One of our readers from the Maddie Daily wrote in and asked the following question. Why hasn't the UC and CSU system established a single set of lower division requirements for transfer students for all majors instead of having different requirements for some majors from campus to campus? For example, from community colleges, students from community colleges planning to enter engineering majors have to check each campus, not just each system, because each campus can set its own transfer requirements. Doesn't this limit a student's ability to transfer? Can or should this be corrected? What do you think?
Well, I think that's an excellent question that's been raised, and in fact, legislation has been passed to address this issue. It is known as SB 1440, in which community colleges are developing transfer associate degrees, and our campuses are working together to assure that they will accept a standard set of preparation from students that is agreed upon in the community college.
Dr. Shealy, what is your thought on that at Cal State Stanislaus?
We're not having a tremendous amount of problem with it, especially with SB 1440. We've been working well with local community colleges, but in truth, right now, the single biggest hurdle to speed up and efficiency is, and this is not a criticism, community colleges aren't structured around majors and deeper levels of advising on majors. So we need a lot more communication between our campuses and the CSU and community colleges so it gets down to students what they need to do.
Dr. Mitchell, is that what you see on your campus down at Bakersfield?
It is, but one of the features of SB 1440 is that students at the community college can get involved in what I call transfer model curricula, so that if they know where it is that they want to transfer, then campuses can help. And we try out these articulations so that students will know that if I take these particular courses and I want to go into engineering at a particular CSU campus, if I take these 60 units, then I can finish at that campus with another 60 units. And so that's a way of trying to help with that. In our situation at Bakersfield, we actually have CSU Bakersfield staff on the campus of our largest feeder community college, Bakersfield College.
What is the situation at UC Merced, Dr. Leland? Is it easy for students or easier for students to transfer in to UC Merced maybe than other UCs?
I don't think it's any easier to transfer in. UC has uniform admission standards across all of its campuses. We are actively, as participants of the Central Valley Higher Education Consortium, working on issues around transfer. I agree that the advisors are key to this.
Okay. Well, what about increasing the number or percentage of students who graduate in a timely manner? What unique strategies are you using on your campus to improve graduation rates? We'll start with you, Dr. Leland. What are you doing at UC Merced?
We have... I think our best program is based on a peer mentoring system where we have students who are at risk academically who are mentored through a plan to get out of risk by students who've been in exactly the same place before.
It seems that would be pretty successful, pretty helpful.
It is.
Yeah. Dr. Welty, what are we doing at Fresno State?
Well, we've been giving this area a concentrated attention the last few years, and pleased to report that last year was our highest graduation rate in our history. And what we're doing, frankly, is increasing the amount of expectations on our advisors, putting more structure into expectations for students in terms of what courses they take and when they take them. We've also, for some students, gone to supplemental instruction, which has been very successful, and helping students that need some additional time and help to complete their courses.
Dr. Sheely, what are we doing at Cal State Stanislaus to improve graduation rates?
All of what has just been said, but let me add, one of the things I'm proudest of is we're doing what we call a holistic academic program review, and one of the major focuses of attention in there is timely graduation. And if the numbers aren't what they should be, the programs themselves are being asked why. Sometimes there's a good answer, sometimes not so good, and we begin to make change.
Great. Dr. Mitchell, what about Cal State Bakersfield? What are you doing to help people graduate, students graduate, in a more timely manner?
We're doing some of the same things, and we're trying to be more purposeful with students who are at risk and to get to them earlier. One of the big impediments that we've concluded here at CSU Bakersfield is the fact that with the level of preparation gaps of many of our students, that being on a quarter system is not in the best interest in terms of student success and graduation. And so we've made a decision to move to a semester system, and we'll begin to do that just as soon as we can work with the chancellor's office to get the resources that will help that happen.
Well, that's interesting. Well, I've got good news and bad news. Good news is I'd like to hear some of your pride points for each of your universities. The bad news is we've only got about a minute left in the segment, so you've got about 15 seconds each to say, you know, what are you most proud of on your campus in terms of impacting the region and the state? We'll start with Dr. Leland at UC Merced.
We, 47% of our students are graduating in STEM disciplines, science, engineering, math, technology. That will be critical for the future of the San Joaquin Valley.
Great. Dr. Welty, what's happening at Fresno State?
We're giving concentrated attention to working with our area school districts to align the curriculum so we can continue to serve the large number of first-generation students that come to Fresno State.
Dr. Sheely, at Cal State Stanislaus, what are you proudest of in terms of impacting the region and the state?
We're a Hispanic service. serving institution. And one of the pieces that we're of that we're most proud is that even in our College of Business, the percent of Latino students is close to 40%. And those students will stay in the area. Those students will impact the business profile of the region for the next several decades.
And Dr. Mitchell, you get the last word.
Yes. Some of the very same things, but let me mention in particular that last fall we were recognized by a national group called Excellencia in Education for our success in providing STEM opportunities for Hispanic students.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us. Dr. Dorothy Leland, Chancellor of the University of California, Merced, Dr. John Welty, President of California State University, Fresno, Dr. Joseph Shealy, President of California State University, Stanislaus, and Dr. Horace Mitchell, President of California State University, Bakersfield. Thanks to all of you for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, by just logging on to our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.